Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome to Criminalia, a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio.
This is a story of a Texas oil tycoon, a congressman from Idaho, and a financial commodities broker in Oklahoma City. And it's a story of blackmail? Yes, but it's also a story of political corruption and ethics uncovered by that blackmail. There's a lot going on here, and almost everyone is guilty. Welcome to Criminalia. I'm Maria Tremarchi.
And I'm Holly Fry. Let's meet this trio. We're going to start with the Texan tycoon. It was estimated that Nelson Bunker Hunt was worth between $8 billion and $16 billion. Yes, billion with a B. Hunt was a Texas oil company executive who also owned 1,000 racehorses, drove a Cadillac, and lost most of his fortune when he and two of his brothers, William Herbert and Lamar, tried to corner the market in silver. Quote, $1 billion ain't what it used to be, he famously said after the collapse. Early in 1981, Bunker Hunt received a blackmail letter demanding he pay $440,000 in exchange for the blackmailer's silence about an $87,000 bribe that Hunt had arranged for Idaho Republican Representative George Hansen in the form of a silver futures purchase for his wife, Connie Hansen, but actually intended to line the pockets of her politician husband.
George Hansen served in the United States House of Representatives for 14 years. Representing Idaho's 2nd District between 1965 and 1969, and then again from 1975 to 1985. He was, as reported by the New York Times, known for his, quote, flamboyance, impulsiveness, affability, and tireless campaigning. He was also a convicted swindler.
The third major player in this story is the blackmailer, a man named Arthur Greenhill Emmons III. Arthur was an Oklahoma commodities brokerage employee at the trading firm Ming & Company. That was where Connie Hansen had made a profit of $87,000 speculating in silver in 1979. Hunt had recommended the firm to the Hansens, and Emmons always believed that Hunt set up the silver deal as a way of funneling bribe money to George Hansen, although he could not prove it.
Outraged about the blackmail letter, Hunt's first instinct was to report it to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Hansen, though, hearing of the blackmailer's letter, instead insisted it be reported to the Justice Department as he held political office. And then the whole time, he was insistent that he was innocent of any financial wrongdoing. That led Emmons, worried he'd be exposed as a blackmailer by the Department of Justice, to send a second letter to Bunker Hunt, asking him to just forget about the whole thing. He signed it, as he had the first letter, with the alias Gordon Warner. The FBI, which is the department that handles such cases, didn't forget about the whole thing and tracked him down, and Arthur turned himself in.
Emmons pleaded guilty to a single count of blackmail for trying to demand money and threatening to tell the FBI that he'd discovered Hunt had bribed Representative George Hansen circuitously through his wife Connie. Emmons' attorney, James Lyons, refused to comment on the case to the press, simply stating that his client was, quote, extremely remorseful. The Washington Post reported slash speculated at the time that Emmons' blackmail attempt was likely because Hunt had allegedly caused wild fluctuations in silver prices in January of 1980, fluctuations that financially hurt a lot of small investors.
Because Emmons cooperated with the government, he was granted immunity from prosecution. He received a suspended one-year sentence and was fined $2,000. But the investigation didn't stop with him. It opened questions, and authorities began to look at the nature of the relationship between the Texas billionaire and the politician. And they found a bombshell. Hansen had made false statements on his congressional financial disclosure forms, including that $87,000 that Emmons noted in his blackmail letter to Hunt.
These disclosure forms were part of the Ethics in Government Act, a federal law enacted in 1978, passed in the wake of the Nixon Watergate scandal. Under the law, all major government officials are required to file annual financial disclosure statements of their sources of income. That law remains in place today, and it includes 1. Amounts of income, gifts, and reimbursements. 2. The identity and approximate value of property held and liabilities owed. 3. Transactions in property, commodities, and securities. And 4. Financial interests of a spouse or dependent. It excludes the reporting of sources of political campaign funds, including campaign receipts and expenditures. Campaign reporting falls under a separate law.
Lawyers for Hunt and Hansen took swift action. 6 days after the blackmail attempt, Hunt's lawyers had Connie Hansen sign notes for each loan in question. The loans, they felt, needed to be clearly listed in Connie's name, and this extra step was assurance they were. According to federal prosecutor Reid Weingarten, the real motive for it was that Hunt and Hansen, quote, wanted to get their ducks in a row.
We're going to take a break here for a word from our sponsors, and when we return, we'll talk in detail about what Hansen didn't disclose and why he thought he didn't have to.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
Hey, everybody, it's Holly. Listen, I've been doing stuff on stage since I was a kid, which means that I have been doing my makeup since I was a kid. And I can turn out a look when I need to, but on my day-to-day, I really like to keep it a little more relaxed and low-key. I don't have time for a full face most of the time. But that also means that Thrive Cosmetics can have me covered no matter what I'm doing, whether I'm doing something on stage, like I have an appearance or a live show, or I'm just running to the grocery store. Something in their line is perfect. And what I really love and what's important to me is that they are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free. And to me, cruelty-free is very important in the cosmetics I use. I mentioned that I've been doing my makeup for a long time. I've gotten older in that time. And one of the things that I've done to refresh my look is switch over to their Brilliant Eye Brighteners and use something like a rose gold shade to really like go all around my eye and then just blend it out and get a daytime smoky look. It makes me look a little more youthful and more refreshed. And it's just easy as pie. And it means that I don't have to mess with a whole ton of products. Refresh your everyday look with Thrive Cosmetics, luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 10% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/criminalia. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/criminalia for 10% off your first order.
This episode is brought to you by Simply Safe. Listen, you listen to true crime podcasts. You know that the world can be dangerous and unpredictable and that there will, unfortunately, be people who want to hurt each other. And so it's kind of nice to get a little peace of mind by having a good home security system. Just take a few precautions. And I recommend looking at Simply Safe Home Security. I've had my home broken into in the past, and it was a terrible feeling, even though nothing that bad really happened. Aside from an intruder, I just really like knowing that I have a security setup that lets me check in on my pets when I'm not home. That is a huge peace of mind giver when I am out traveling. Simply Safe sent me a whole home security system, and I was really, really impressed by the variety of indoor and outdoor cameras they offer. And the whole thing is backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than a dollar a day. Get 20% off any new Simply Safe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplysafe.com/criminalia. That's simplysafe, SimpliSafe.com/criminalia. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
Welcome back to Criminalia. George Hansen was charged for failing to comply with the Ethics Act, and he was indicted and went to trial. So let's talk about what went on in that courtroom.
George Hansen was indicted by a federal grand jury in April of 1981 and tried on charges that he failed to disclose four major financial transactions, including one, an $87,475 profit on the purchase and sale of 125 silver futures contracts over a two-day period in 1979. Two, a $50,000 personal loan in Connie Hansen's name from a Dallas bank, co-signed by Hunt in 1978. Three, a $61,503.42 loan directly from Bunker Hunt in 1980 to Connie Hansen, and four personal loans totaling $135,000 in 1981 by individuals in Virginia. Feeling surprisingly optimistic about his case, Hansen stated things, quote, could be over before it starts. They were not.
On the first day of trial, Bunker Hunt testified that he had lent money and given financial advice to Connie Hansen, but only after George Hansen had assured him that the couple had made separate financial arrangements. He stated he had, quote, some reservations about giving money directly to a politician, but that Hansen had convinced him it would be, quote, all right to help Connie make some money.
Hunt, who described himself on the stand as, quote, largely self-employed, testified for more than 2 hours. Federal prosecutor Weingarten questioned him about his dealings with the Hansons and if he had dealt only with Connie Hansen as a, quote, way to provide George Hansen money and not get yourself in trouble. To which Hunt replied, quote, I wouldn't put it that strongly. I was trying to help the Hansen family with the problems they had. As to how these two men knew each other, Hunt testified that Hansen had approached him a few years earlier in 1978, after they had met at a dinner function. Hansen had confided that he needed contributions to overcome between $300,000 and $400,000 in debts resulting from his congressional campaign, as well as the cost of his defense against charges that he had violated federal campaign laws in 1975.
The prosecution discovered that Hansen and his wife had signed a financial separation agreement dividing their property, which we mentioned earlier. But they also discovered the couple didn't really play by those rules. They had continued to keep everything in both their names and filed joint tax returns. In addition, lawyers for the prosecution traced the loans in question through a network of banks to prove Hansen 100% knew about transactions in his wife's name and that he had benefited from them. Addressing the jury, federal prosecutor James Cole stated that Hansen had intentionally hidden transactions by filing false statements and that, quote, the evidence will show that he knew they were false and he intended them to be false when he filed them. Spoiler alert, it did.
During the trial, it came to light that, with a bit of sleight of hand, the $87,000, which was actually $87,475, profit from the silver contracts had been, suspiciously, run through two banks. Connie testified that the money was used to pay off loans, but she could not recall what loans. The Hunt-backed $50,000 bank loan was intended for Connie to cover a $33,855 loss on a 1977 soybeans commodities deal, a deal that the Hunt family had also lost money in. Connie Hansen, though, failed to repay that loan, and when the bank collected from Hunt, her co-signer, he then sought to get his money back with interest, a total of $61,503 from the Hansons. These loans and the silver contracts, they were all in Connie's name, a fact the prosecution used to show that Representative Hansen knew exactly what he was doing, and that was hiding money.
Hansen's explanation for the $135,000 loan was that the money, at least in part, was for the Association of Concerned Taxpayers, a group that promoted his book criticizing the Internal Revenue Service. He later explained that he didn't declare it on his 1982 financial disclosure statements because, he claimed, the money was given to an organization he created and headed to promote his tax legislation and related book. He had, though, reported the interest on his income tax returns, which were filed jointly with his wife. John Meade Jr., a former Southern Virginia banker who was himself later convicted of embezzlement, testified he had lent Hansen $50,000 on November 21st, 1981. Now, this was also part of the $135,000 in question, so he lent it while he was trying to rally support to convince the United States Army to explore research into hydrogen cars. The loan, Meade also stated, was intended to help Hansen promote a book he was writing about Iran.
Defense lawyer Stephen Braga argued the government's evidence was immaterial to the charges and that it failed to prove Hansen was calling the shots for his wife's financial dealings. Another of Hansen's attorneys, Nathan Lewin, called the congressman a, quote, man of limited means who had, quote, an enormous personal debt of nearly $400,000 and that he was in a, quote, terrible financial bind. He argued that Hansen wasn't trying to hide anything, and highlighted that it was on an attorney's advice that he and his wife had drawn up an agreement to separate their finances. When Hansen filed the disclosure statements, Lewin explained, quote, he thought those loans had been the property of Mrs. Hansen and were therefore not reportable on the forms.
So on that, we're going to take a break for a word from our sponsors. When we're back, we'll talk more about Hansen's trial.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from the Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow the Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Escape to summer with Victoria's Secret. Pack your bags with just-arrived swim, cover-ups, corset tops, and other sexy silhouettes. When the sun goes down, opt for bold and blingy styles, like the made-to-be-seen Very Sexy Push-Up Bra from the Very Sexy Collection, in on-trend hues like Black Shine, Green, and Citron. For a glam statement, pair them with your favorite jeans and bring the heat. Because life is better in a bikini. Rewind to the future with the VS Archive Swim Collection, inspired by Victoria's Secret's classic looks from the 90s and early 2000s. For endless out-of-office options, mix and match with Victoria's Secret's wide range of bikini tops and bottoms that offer you every type of coverage, from full to cheeky to minimal. And now, in this season's must-have shades and patterns, add the finishing touch with a limited edition Bombshell Escape fragrance, a free-spirited take on the iconic Victoria's Secret scent. Dive into a vibrant blend of juicy guava, lush palms, and summer glow peony. Shop now at your closest Victoria's Secret store or online at victoriassecret.com.
Welcome back to Criminalia. Guilty? Not guilty? Let's find out.
As we talked about earlier in the show, the Ethics in Government Act requires congressmen and other high-ranking government officials to file annual reports disclosing their income and other financial transactions. Hansen's attorneys claimed his omissions from the ethics disclosure statements were not a willful violation of any law because Congress did not intend to use those statements for anything. But the jury didn't buy that. A United States District Court jury, which was sequestered in a local motel during the trial, deliberated for 3.5 hours and found the congressman guilty on all 4 counts.
Hansen was the first public official to be tried for violating the Ethics in Government Act. And if he was convicted, he was facing a maximum of 5 years in prison and a $10,000 fine for each charge. He was found guilty of 4 counts of filing false financial disclosure statements.
In June of 1984, United States District Court Judge Joyce Hens Green sentenced Hansen to serve 5 to 15 months in prison and fined him $40,000 for filing false financial disclosure forms to Congress in direct violation of the 1978 Ethics in Government Act. Hansen could have been reprimanded, censured, or expelled from office, and Green told him that she based his sentence on, quote, deterrence, setting an example, punishment, rehabilitation, and justice. At his sentencing, Hansen stated, quote, there was no theft, no scandalous stuffing of money into a politician's pocket. There was no kickback from the staff or misuse of public funds. There was no act of drunkenness, no act of violence, no accident leaving someone dead or injured. Hansen's lawyer, Lewin, stated to the press that he planned on filing for a new trial on grounds that, quote, errors were made in the proceedings.
After his trial, Hansen accused the Justice Department of singling him out for prosecution because he had criticized their department as he had the Internal Revenue Service. In a letter to the House Standards of Official Conduct Committee, Hansen accused Special Counsel Stanley Brand, who conducted the ethics investigation, of having a, quote, direct conflict of interest, and wrote, quote, my confidence in the nonpartisan deliberations of your committee has been destroyed. Hansen also stated in his letter that Brand, who was general counsel for the House of Representatives before he entered private practice, was on retainer to the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee during the investigation, and that was a conflict. Brand did work for the campaign on, quote, a limited matter, but he had disclosed that to the ethics panel, and it was a non-issue.
Federal prosecutor Weingarten stated that Hansen, quote, took great care to hide very suspicious and potentially embarrassing transactions. In his closing arguments addressing the jury, he stated that Hansen was using his wife as a, quote, front for concealing his financial dealings with Bunker Hunt. Weingarten called the financial separation agreement, quote, phony, and something the Hansons used to avoid the legal requirements of the Ethics Act, yet not when it came time to pay their taxes. He also argued that Hansen's actions, quote, when exposed to the fresh air, emit an odor that can be picked up all the way from Pocatello. It was not an odor of spring flowers, but the stench of political corruption. Hansen, he continued, quote, went to great lengths to hide that stench from his colleagues on the Hill, the press, and from the good people of Idaho.
Defense attorney Lewin, who strongly believed that Weingarten brought the indictment against Hansen for, quote, personal ambition, said after the verdict that the impending appeal would cover a, quote, whole range of issues involved in what he called, quote, an injustice. Lewin also stated that he believed that jury sequestration had led to, quote, an unfair verdict. Hansen stated that he didn't blame the jury for that, but that the, quote, smokescreen made by the Justice Department obscured the facts for the jury. I consider myself innocent. Prosecutors Weingarten and Cole stated they were, quote, satisfied justice was done.
So despite all this, Hansen ran for re-election that year while appealing his conviction. And he lost only by 167 votes. Instead of serving in public office, he served a year in federal prison. Actually, he served 6 months and then another 6 months for violating his parole. In 1995, after many appeals, the charges against him were dismissed by the Supreme Court. This wasn't Hansen's first time in the courtroom, though. He was convicted in 1975 of election law violations. And it also wasn't his last. He was subsequently convicted in an entirely different case on 45 counts of bank fraud, for which he was incarcerated for 40 months. In 1992, Hansen was also convicted and incarcerated on charges of defrauding two Idaho banks and 200 people in a $30 million investment scheme. In true Hansen form, he denied he'd done anything wrong and claimed the accusations against him were nothing more than a government vendetta, which we've heard a couple other times from him.
Whoo, Hansen, do you want to have a sip of something yummy to wash the taste of all of this out of our mouths?
Yes, I do.
Okay, this one was actually tricky for me to think about because I was like, how do I want to approach this? I thought about a few different things. I looked at like lists of crops in Texas, of things we might include, the usual stuff that I do.
Right. What goes on in Idaho? Can I do something with potato? Yeah.
Don't worry. There's going to be a potato, but it's optional. And then it occurred to me, like, what kinds of drinks were people drinking in the 70s when this actual criminal activity was going on? And what popped into my mind was the Harvey Wallbanger.
Oh, I haven't thought of this drink in a long time.
Here's the thing about a Harvey Wallbanger. I think if you're, you know, I remember when we are of an age where we heard about it as kids. And I don't know about you, but to me, it sounded like a badass. What a name, right? That's a masculine hard drink.
And I actually don't think I've ever had one.
No, it tastes like a creamsicle.
I'm like,
it tastes like a creamsicle. It's not like a shot of whiskey and a punch in the eye. It's like literally, it tastes like magic. But it has its own interesting history because it was actually a really popular drink in the 70s because it was promoted by the McKesson Imports Company to try to get attention on the liquor they were in, on the liqueur they were importing, which was Galliano, of which I am a fan. Galliano, if you haven't had it before, I've probably talked about it in recipes. Sometimes people will refer to it as a vanilla liqueur. I probably have. That's a little misleading because it also has notes of anise and some other like citrus tones. There's a little smoky note to it. It's its own interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
And their original one, they came up with this. It had like a cartoon character that went with it who was like a surfer named Harvey Wallbanger. Not at all like the dudes in this story. Their original recipe for a Harvey Wallbanger, and it's like a variation on a screwdriver,
okay,
was 6 ounces of orange juice, 1 ounce of vodka, stir with ice, splash in a 1/2 ounce of Galliano. So I thought, how can we take this drink that was very popular then and make it something different and a little interesting and maybe even a little silly and also very yummy? Because that just sounded right. So for ours, here's what we're doing. We're keeping the vodka, but we're bumping it up to 1.5 ounces. And this is where I'm going to make my case, in case anyone out there has not had a potato vodka, because now is the time.
Yes.
I love potato vodka. It's very smooth. By the way, vodka can be made out of almost anything. There are actually arguments in among countries about the laws.
Mm-hmm.
There was a big argument in the EU about what could and could not be considered vodka some years back. But really, if you have like a sugar and something starchy and you can ferment those, you can make a vodka. But a potato vodka is really like smooth and delicious. They're not hard to find. There are several brands that are really good. Most liquor stores carry them. If you can't find it on the regular shelf, ask the person that works at your liquor store. Sometimes it's on like that little narrow shelf where they put like what they consider the higher end vodkas.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
But it's usually not that expensive. Try potato vodka if you haven't. It's amazing. So 1.5 ounces of vodka, 1/2 ounce of Galliano. Look, if you can't find Galliano, get a vanilla liqueur. It won't be quite the same, but you can do it. And then you're going to add 1 ounce of pineapple juice. And I know they wanted theirs stirred, but I like to shake this because the liqueur and the juice, it just makes it all smooth out together. And then you're going to shake that with ice, strain it over fresh ice in a highball glass, And then we're not doing orange juice, but what we are going to do is orange soda. This makes this the silliest, tastiest drink. I will confess a thing. I made this twice this morning. I did not drink two cocktails before we came in, but I did have to make it twice. The first time, often I'll look for a low sugar soda.
Yeah.
And I got one of the fancy pants unicorn orange sodas that has low sugar and prebiotics in it.
Oh, wow.
It was fine, but it wasn't what I was after.
Do you want the soda from our childhood?
Then, yeah, I had to go back and get the sodas of our childhood. There are a few different very yummy orange sodas that, depending on where you lived, might have been your jam. Mm-hmm. And
that's perfect.
This is one that literally tastes like, it just is that moment in Ratatouille when Anton Ego remembers being a kid. It took me right back to like being a kid on my skates.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Go into the pool. I was like, I'm going to skate down to the pool and then I'm going to swim and then I'm going to put my skates back on and go home. It was like that. And I like that it brought about that sense of innocence when we have been talking about nothing but corruption. Right. It's like the antidote to this.
I was just about to say that. It's a nice pairing.
To make this a mocktail is easy as pie. We are going to say, sometimes we'll do a bump up and be like, just use more juice. Don't in this case, because it's already really sweet. So you will still use your ounce of pineapple juice. When I mentioned top it off with orange soda, I put about 4 ounces on mine. You can up or down that depending on your taste, but I did about 4 ounces. And instead of the vodka, I would just use like a sparkling water or a seltzer if you have it. And obviously, you're not going to shake that because your shaker will pop. Don't do that. And then instead of Galliano, I would skip that completely and I would add a couple drops of vanilla extract. Yeah. I wouldn't do a vanilla syrup here because you already have a lot of sweet stuff going on. And that's just going to make it cloying. So that, again, the mocktail is 1.5 ounces of sparkling water or seltzer, a couple drops of vanilla liqueur, 1 ounce of pineapple juice, and then 4 ounces at your discretion of orange soda total. So still very yummy. It's still going to make you feel like you're in a younger time. It also, like, let's be clear. These things were happening when I was at the age that I was putting on my roller skates and running around town and wanted to go swimming and be innocent. It's all tied into my psyche. That's what I need in terms of, we all need a break, and this is a drink that gives you a break. Every once in a while, you need a ridiculous drink that is sweet and is based on the sodas you grew up with when you were a kid.
It's true.
There's something so fun about it, and you can't help but giggle. It's not like the kind of thing you're going to savor with friends in a high-end bar.
What kind of
But it's
of
exactly
you
what you need
there?
Sometimes. Stick a straw in that thing and have your moment. Travel back in time to innocence. And then all that sugar will give you the energy to fight the corrupt people in our lives today.
Exactly. I think we all know I'm not the biggest like sweet person. This is so childhood for me that that doesn't even matter.
Yeah, it's just fun. It's just fun. And we are calling this one the Fraudster because it doesn't even feel like you're drinking a cocktail, even though there's vodka and Galliano in it. So
just having some orange soda.
It feels fake. It references the many frauds of Hansen and also hopefully puts a smile on your face. We certainly get smiles on our faces knowing that you have spent this time with us, and we hope you will come back next week. We're going to talk a little bit more about blackmail, but we're nearing the end of the season, and then we'll roll into something brand new. We will see you right back here next week on Criminalia. Criminalia is a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from Shondaland Audio, please visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.